to another episode of Natural Thoughts and Talks. I'm Venture, and we have a great episode for you guys today. Go ahead and tell the listener your name and where you're coming from.
My name is Stephen Pearson, and I am living in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, which is right outside of Harrisburg, part of the capital.
Okay, familiar with Harrisburg, so it's good to know. You know you're in an interesting spot when you got to give the relation to, like, it's actually this far away from this spot, right,
over yeah,
here. So yeah. How long have you been there for? Are you, you know, born and raised or from Pennsylvania?
No, 5 years. I was born and raised in upstate New York, a small town named Johnstown. Johnstown and Gloversville are like the glove cities. Was the glove capital or leather capital of the world up until the 1930s.
I love random facts like that. Yeah. It's my favorite.
It was an interesting place to grow up with the leather industry there. Lots of leather mills, and unfortunately lots of pollution because of the leather mills and high rates of cancer and stuff. There's a great author from the area I grew up, Richard Russo, who writes his books that kind of discuss, you know, the environment that, you know, it was. They're beautiful books, but they're heartbreaking too.
Yeah, those are the worst stories, is when it's like, yeah, oh my gosh, I was grew up 2 miles from this factory, and then the factory was pumping out just absolute waste into the lake, and then everybody ended up getting that stuff. So obviously, you know, we're going to take a deeper dive into your background and, you know, kind of dive into things here in a second, but just give us kind of the quick run on, obviously you're an artist and, you know, you've been doing that, and just the quick kind of highlight reel of what we're kind of getting into. What are you about, right?
I'm an artist and an art professor. I focus mostly on painting in my own work, but I teach printmaking, 3D design or sculpture, and then painting, drawing, color theory, things like that. So a wide range. But my work itself focuses on painting, and I've done everything from realist figurative art, doing narratives with incorporating people and figures, to abstraction and non-representational art. When I went through school, it was mostly for figurative art. And after graduate school, it was like a slow 6-year transition towards abstraction. And the abstraction lasted for 17 years, and then the pandemic hit, and I found myself shifting back to representation, which is an odd thing, but it was, you know, being home, being in a place, having to teach my classes online, giving full drawing demonstrations of how to draw a still life, how to paint a still life, made me go back into painting, you know, still lives and places and people.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I like that, you know, ability to be able to shift, you know, to make those changes, not be afraid to follow those changes, which in the art world, sometimes it used to be kind of frowned upon. You find a thing, you stay with that thing. I've always liked the artists that didn't do that, like Picasso. Mm-hmm. Picasso, you know, shifted a lot. My graduate director, Grace Hartigan, was one of the abstract expressionist that was with Jackson Pollock and that group. And she was one that was not afraid to follow her art, let the art lead her. Those are the kinds of artists that, you know, I've kind of made myself follow, just being open.
Yeah. And the thing that jumps out at me is just the importance of being multidimensional in whatever it is that you're pursuing, right? Because, I mean, kind of one of the first questions that jumps out at me is your concept of just being a professor, right? And then a professor of art. So it seems like you're taking something that is so creative in a space that is traditionally the least creative, right? Of like academics and just, you know, stiff kind of, we do the routine and this is all we do. And like, how have you navigated that and kind of found your way in that system, right? To help your kids and just the, you know, people grow.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. But I think what has worked for me is I teach at a liberal arts college. So I've heard in a couple of your episodes, you talking about liberal arts and that it's, you know, bad that you can't major in that anymore. But you can You can at the master's level here. They have a master of liberal arts, but we're a liberal arts school. So you might have a major, but you have a lot of classes that you're taking, besides just your major. So teaching art in a liberal arts institution has made me take a more creative approach to the way I teach it. And I want them to understand how to, draw from life, how to paint from life. But then I really encourage my students to look at the world that they're in, like look at their surroundings, see the way things connect. And then to think of it interdisciplinary. How do things connect? How does something you're interested in art, like maybe drawing people or still lives, connect to the social, the natural world, the social world, the natural world, the political world, so finding those connections to their other classes. I really try to push them to think about what they're learning in their liberal arts classes and how they can bring that to their art so that they're making art that says something rather than art that looks like art.
I like that a lot. And just connecting it to what you're seeing, because I think I love to, my perspective is I'm artistic in the way that I like work hard. It's an art in the discipline that I have and whatever it is that I do. What it might be something as simple as like, I don't know, building a wall, which isn't the most creative thing, but the way that I do it is just like, man, he's hammering and he's hammering and he's hammering. And like, that's the unique part that I love and pa I'm passionate about. So I think it's just awesome to hear, like, maybe break down a little bit about some of your favorite classes that you teach. And then I'll kind of take it from there. But just obviously, we'll go from there and then we'll kind of scale it back into your career as an artist. But I just love the, I can feel how passionate you are about, you know, your craft of just molding the next generation. And that's amazing. I love to hear more about it.
I think it's a good thing that you say there. I don't know. I think my students like that I'm so passionate about molding them, but I also push them a lot,
Oh, okay.
to work hard and but I see the potential in them. Even at the small program, I've had so many students go on to graduate programs and go on to be active artists because they're they're hard workers. But so favorite classes I like to teach, it's I like them all, but I think the ones that stand out would be painting, color theory, and then I have this class called Advanced Studio Art. The color theory I like because you're taking this kind of the science of color and how color works and showing students how to really use it to push their paintings or their designs, because I get graphic design students and studio art students, but how to use that color to really enhance what they're doing and avoid the color mistakes that they could use. So there's some really bad color combinations that you just want to, try to stay away from, or you can see it, like if you ask me, what are the bad color combinations? I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head, but I can see it when you use it. But it's about how bright the colors are working next to each other, or, just the way that they're the colors are acting off of each other. So teaching that color theory class, I teach them to think about the way color affect or how color works, then how color affects color, how light affects color, and how emotions can affect the way we perceive color. So that's it's a really fun class to see how the students learn how to use that color, and they're always taking that into their classes beyond. So if they take it before the painting class, or if they get into their graphic design classes, I can really see that they're using some of the concepts they learned from that color class. And then I'd say painting and printmaking, two fun classes as well. Painting, it's just learning that, getting them to experiment with how paint moves and how to depict the objects in front of them. And it's because I paint all the time, I like to see the students, learn to develop that. And I have a student who I've continued to work with after she's graduated. She came in, thinking she was an il digital illustrator, and now she's like painting every day and doing these like 5 foot by 4 foot paintings that are quite amazing. So it's fun to see that students catch that bug. printmaking, I teach them how to work with like linoleum prints, relief prints, intaglio, which is metal plate, silk screen, and I just inherited a lithography press, so I'm gonna try to teach myself how to do lithography. I had somebody contact me out of the blue and asked if I'd be interested in a lithography press, an etching press, and all these lithography stones that a widow was trying to give away. Her husband was an artist that worked till he's 94. He worked right up to like a week before he passed away, and
Oh,
she was
wow.
just giving them away. And you can't say no to those opportunities. I've never done lithography, but I took a workshop this a couple months ago, and I'm gonna keep trying to learn how to work with this stuff and make the most of that gift.
And you're gonna have to tell me what is lithography?
Lithography is a printmaking process that traditionally works on stone. So
Okay.
you have thick, heavy limestones, and you draw on the stone. You have to prepare the stone. This is the stuff I'm trying to learn. You prepare the stone with certain chemicals, and then you draw on the stone with the wax crayons, and then you put some more chemicals on it, and then it's ready to print. Then you ink it up and you run it through a press. So it's, again, I'm just learning it, so I can't give you
Okay. Yeah, no, I
the
see. I just looked it up. I Googled it.
yeah.
That's
So
this is like some old-timey stuff.
it's very old-timey, but it's very if you love to draw and you love to paint, it's a nice natural transition to that printmaking form. But
Oh, this is
my
dope.
favorite class is Advanced Studio, because that's where they take all the classes, and they use what they might have learned in painting or printmaking, drawing. And they're coming up with their own themes. So they have to think of things that they want to make art about. They run the themes by me. We talk about which themes seem like they might have legs, might be able to develop into a body of work, and then they can work. I always tell them, let the idea dictate your medium. Don't let the medium dictate your idea. So that
Whoa,
means
whoa, say that again. Run that by me. That was fire.
Let the idea dictate the medium. Don't let the medium dictate the idea. So don't come in saying you're a painter. I can only paint. If your idea says, if the idea you're talking to me about, like if the student's telling me their idea and they don't know how to make that into like a drawing or a painting, I think, my job is to say, well, did you think that that might be better as an audio piece, just audio or video art or sculpture or installation? So a lot of the students work in multimedia or interdisciplinary. So I have students who are doing painting, video art, audio art, printmaking, but all with the same theme. So they have this umbrella theme that the work is under, but they each project might be in a different medium because it fits that idea better. So
Yeah.
it opens them up to try new things.
I like that. I like that. Don't put yourself in a box, right?
Exactly.
Oftentimes, it, I mean, that really kind of stay like points out to don't, oftentimes when we try something, it could be as an artist, could be as a businessman, whatever it is, entrepreneurship, you spend the first, what, 2, 3 years of your career trying to be the guy that you think is the successful version of whatever it is that you're doing. Could be real estate, right? You're like, this is what a perfect real estate broker looks like, right? This is how he acts. This is how he eats. This is how he walks. And then it's weird because once you actually make that transition to, no, I'm gonna just be myself. I'm gonna try to actually be the best version of myself and not try to like tunnel myself into what I see everybody else doing. Guess what? You end up selling 50 houses that year. You end up, like building your just things skyrocket. And it's just an amazing way that it works with art like that too, right?
And that's a difficult thing. What you're saying, like just be yourself, figure out who you are, because when you're studying art, we're showing you so many different artists. Here are the examples of these really good, successful artists. Artists still working today. But then even besides that, they have social media. So they've got Instagram, they've got Pinterest. They're seeing so many things out there, and getting them sometimes to put those away and just trust their own voice, and figure out what that voice is. That can be the hard thing. And they, because they're always trying to figure out, like, what's my style? How do I get to my style? Well, just listen to yourself. I was listening to a podcast earlier, and someone said, when someone asks them like how to find their voice or their style, they're like, you know, it's like your handwriting. Nobody tell, you know, you didn't tell yourself how to handwrite. It just comes to you. Same with making your art. Just listen to yourself and you'll figure out who you are. But it's easier said than done. You know, you have to experiment and you have to be ready for failure. You fail forward. You try to fail forward, you know.
That's been my biggest thing too, is just like trying to set proper expectations, healthy expectations, right? To where I see so many people being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna try. My favorite story is like my little sister. She tried out for like the JV cross country team, right? And she's like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm gonna be good. I ran some track back in my day, right? Like that was what we did. Like when we fucking showed up, we showed up to run some track, right? Nobody else was there. We were going to get all the medals, right? That's not her mentality at all. She's a beautiful flower. She just, you know, wants to socialize, stuff like that. So when she just brought up the fact that she was like, hey, I'm gonna be running competitively, she was like, oh shit, like I gotta tell Venture, right? Like this is what I gotta do. And I just try to tell her, like, hey, what is all this pressure you're putting on yourself? It's your first meet ever. You're gonna get last place. It's okay. Like, I got last place my first meet, and then I got last, and I said, this is never gonna fucking happen again. I'm gonna work every single day to make sure that this doesn't happen, or at least I put myself in a position to, you know, best suit my success that I'm looking for. And she was like, it was almost like she had to go out there and win a gold medal in her mind. And I'm like, that is not what anybody in the stands. That's not what I'm expecting of you. You're the only one that is like making that knot in your head to stress out over. Hey, go out there and just do your best, right? I'm gonna be proud of you, whatever. She got last place. No, second to last place. Okay. She beat one person, gave her the biggest hug ever, and was like, did you have fun? Yeah, I had fun. It's just the start. We can just grow from here, and you do whatever it is that you want. And that's the point of like, as an artist, it's so simple to kind of be like, yeah, this is my craft, right? But you do have to work your craft every single day. You have to try to set expectations where you're not trying to be the best. You're not, it's good to be there one day, right? But just take it day by day. Just try to get a little bit better, right? Just try to get the reps in. And I think sometimes, some of the times I felt most proud about myself is not when I've even completed a project, but when I've just showed up to the project when I knew I was like, man, I feel like dog shit today. Like, you know, man, let's say we got those big 5x4 canvases and it's blank. Hey, by me just getting a brush and just making one stroke on it, right? Like that's it right there. I did something. We can build with that, right? Is that kind of the message that you try to push sometimes to your guys?
Oh, exactly. Doing, just a little bit every day, especially, in college that, they have other classes and they're trying to balance everything. And I'm like, look, if you can just find 15, 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour to come in outside of class, you're going to keep up on things and you're going to get better. But if you just try to wait till each class just to come to class to do the work, you're not going to be successful. You've got to find the time. And it might just be you can come in for a half hour today. One thing I tell them, like after they're out of school and they're trying to set up a studio practice, to there might be days where you don't feel like getting in the studio, but if you can go into the studio and even just read, like whatever book you're reading, doesn't have to be an art book, can be fantasy, sci-fi, but you're sitting in front of your painting reading, you're there, and while you're reading, you're gonna look at the painting, you're gonna think about things you need to be doing to make that painting better, and then the next day you go in, you're gonna find it's a better day. So you don't have to beat yourself up, but you do have to get in there.
And that's sometimes the easiest and the hardest thing, right? Is my favorite thing is literally just, and I'm so positive. Like I'm naturally just so positive in the things that I do to where, let's say, everybody hates working out. Everybody hates going to the gym, right? It's a daily battle. I have those days too where I just go, hey, this is my agreement with myself. I can go to the gym, sit on a machine, and if I'm not feeling it, as soon as my ass hits the little whatever, I can leave. All right. If that, I've never done that once in my life. Life, right? You get in there, you're like, everybody else is working out. All right, let's start warming up. Let's get after it. And then, you know, you get your pump in, but it's just so funny. I want to take it back as we talk about like the opportunities and the resources. We'll take a deeper dive into that, but your generation, right? Making a life around art is one of the scariest things that I think someone could ask me to do because It's so like wild. I don't know. That's the only way I could put it, is wild. If I had a kid and they came to me and they're like, "Yeah, I want to be an artist." I believe in them. We're gonna get it done, right? But if they had said, "Hey, I want to build a steel company," or "I want to, get into the finance industry," I'd be like, "Oh yeah, we got people for that. That's fine. Like we can, there's a path to do that that is, I'm not guaranteed, but like the math is math. We can do that. There's no math in art, right? Like it's a little bit strange." So I want to hear kind of back in your day, what was your process for, did you go to art school? Like what was your background with that?
Always did art, from kindergarten or whatever, before kindergarten on up, always like the best kid in the class making art. Tried to be an entrepreneur in third grade. I would do drawings of Donald Duck or Gene Simmons from Kiss, and sell them for like a quarter. And then in high school, I would do people's art homework for them, and try to do it, so it didn't look like mine, and I'd do that for like, $5 or something. Not the best thing to do, but I wouldn't want my students doing that, doing somebody else's homework for them. But so I, always did art, but I never thought, what I could do with it. I knew you could be an art teacher, but being an artist, like trying to, just make it as an artist. The town I grew up in, you didn't hear about people who did that. Although there's actually a well-known sculptor that's from my town that I didn't learn about until a few years ago. But I pre-enlisted in the Navy in my summer before my senior year of high school, went and enlisted. And then I thought about getting out of that enlistment to go to school for art and told my father. And my father, he didn't finish high school. He was a working man. He was a truck driver. He did a lot of jobs before he found truck driving. Then he found truck driving. That's what he did for his career. He thought I was, he was not happy when I said that. And it wasn't a calm conversation. But he thought I was going to end up selling like velvet Elvis paintings on the side of the road with a VW bus. So I went, I finished, I went into the Navy. I finished my enlistment, got the GI Bill, and then, came out and went to community college because I never took the SATs because I, had already pre-enlisted. But I enrolled at the community college and I thought, like, what are the things I'm good at? And I went and talked to my old high school teacher and, said, I'm thinking I could major in art, English, history. All three don't get you jobs, or maybe electronics, because I did that. I did some electronics in my job in the Navy. And she's like, "Yeah, do electronics. You don't want to do art." And I think she knew that I was the type of person that if you tell me not to do that, that's what I'm gonna do. So I'm like, screw that. I'm, gonna major in art. And so I started taking art classes at the community college, transferred to a 4-year school in Albany, New York. But I was doing art education because I thought, I could teach high school. But once I had to work with third graders, once a week in this class I was taking, I'm like, I don't want to do this. At the same time, my paintings were really coming along and I just wanted to paint. So I changed my major to just straight studio, got out with that, and I took a year off and kept making art, and then went to graduate school in Baltimore, and from there it just kind of things fell in place. I knew, what I had to do to try to be successful is just, keep making art, have a job that, might pay for my bills. So I was a mall security guard. I did that through college. I was a mall security through college and then after grad school. Also picked up a class teaching painting and didn't think I'd be good at it. And apparently I was okay. I didn't, didn't hurt the students, their painting education. And they asked me to come back and teach more classes and it just, rolled on from there. And what I liked about that is I could, teach at the college level. Wasn't as demanding in terms of putting together like lesson plans every night for high school, teaching what I know. And then I'm around these creative people, the other professors, the students. It just jazzes you up and makes you want to get back into your studio when you're done teaching your classes. So,
Oh, that's got to be the best feeling ever. I want to stop on Mall Cop for a second.
yeah.
Got any crazy citizens arrests that you put out there? Or did you
Oh my
solve any
God.
cases during your stint there? What was the
I
funniest
did
thing
that for
happened?
I did that for like 12 years through undergrad and then after grad school till I got my full-time teaching job at Iowa State. I taught there for 3 years full-time. And we had bicycle, we did bike patrol. I never had the Segway like Paul Blart.
Oh man.
But it was, outside of Schenectady, New York. And there, we'd have some stuff happen. I broke up a knife fight, broke up a baseball bat fight.
Oh man, you're out there in
Yeah,
combat, huh?
we had one night the cops came in to arrest these kids that had warrants out, and then it was a Friday night, so it was like all these teenagers in the mall, and it turned into almost a riot. It was crazy.
Oh, geez.
I got surrounded and luckily got out before I got, tackled and
Oh,
but yeah, it was nuts. So there were some, funky things, that you ran into. There's a
yeah,
lot of
malls can be a wild place, that's for sure.
yeah.
That's the best spot to people watch, right? The mall and the
Definitely.
airport, right?
Yeah.
So
Yep.
I want to kind of park it on your dad for a second, because there's a common thing that I'm kind of seeing as far as him being tough on you, right? Or the lack of support maybe in that moment for your passion, your kind of thing, your interests, right? And
Yeah.
it's one of those things where's your dad from? Is he an East Coast guy as well? You guys go back
Yeah.
long time?
Yeah, he was born in Connecticut, but he bounced around. So he went from
Okay.
relative to relative, foster homes, and then finally back with his dad. But so he was in upstate New York, Washington, D.C., and then Schenectady, New York. So,
So an
but
old school guy, old school
old
hardworking guy,
school.
right?
But once
Definitely.
I got out of the Navy, he was okay with me doing whatever. He's like,
Oh.
you served your country. You want to study art. I mean, I paid for my education myself, so, but they let me live at home while I commuted to school with no rent. But he was totally supportive of that. And now he's retired. He retired at 75. Took him that long to retire, and he paints every day up in his little studio. So
Oh,
he'll send
that's
me, he'll send me a text with pictures of his recent painting and ask
yeah.
for, you know.
So you grade them hard or what? You're
I
like
try not to. I give them feedback, but I don't want to discourage them,
and the discouraging part, that's the part that I'm talking about, is in our society, it's definitely, I want your take on it, because I haven't been alive long enough. I think it has been getting better as far as like the what's the word? Acceptance of art, right? Because a lot of people aren't understanding that like art is the only thing that moves culture. It really is the main mover of culture. And when we live in a society where we're all trying to either get after it, or we're all trying to, make our mark or whatever it is, just survive, right? The main thing that brings us together is art. It doesn't matter where you look, whatever that medium is, whatever that outlet is. So why is it that we'll spend, I don't know, we'll have kids in front of the computer or in front of the teacher for X amount of hours, but they only get to go to art class once a week, right? So it's like, that's something to where an outlet, I know there's kids out there. Mine was movement. Mine was sports. I had to be outside. I was the guy that you throw in the middle of the ocean, give him a little rowboat, and he'll be like, oh, he's gonna find his way back. It's venture. Like he's not gonna die. This is what he loves to do. And just having the artists and actually kind of having more stories out there of success stories. As many artists as I've had out here, it starts out as like, yeah, no, it was rocky, this and that. And then all of a sudden, oh, I'm running a campaign with Toyota. Oh, hey, I'm one of the top guys in LA over here. And guess what? I was just a dumb kid that picked up a camera at some point in time, right? So luckily I had support around me, these stories that I'm hearing, right? To go out there and just get better every single day. It's weird that art isn't looked at that level as when I walk into, let's say, the family reunion of Thanksgiving and I'm getting praised because Venture's in finance. Oh, he's going to take care of everybody. He's amazing. He's this and that. It's the same thing. I show up, I got to get better. I got to learn, open up the book, kind of get better every single day. And that's the same thing with art, right? Is the value that you're providing to your community. Those are those common threads that I'm seeing. And I think it's just, I understand that parents, especially old school parents back in the day, they're just trying to protect you, right? Hey, it's a big, scary world out there. We just want you to be secure, right? Quote unquote secure. When today's, the way the market's moving now, the way the economy works, you're not going to get that factory job that you're going to work for 30 years. You're just not going to do that anymore, right?
No.
The government job that you think is going to take care of everything and give you that pension and you're just going to be good. Hey, you see it all the time. I see it at least once a month, or it'll be some major institution that just goes belly up, and all of a sudden they got what, 400 employees that they just left high and dry that are sitting there with their hand out, like, what do I do? So that sense of security and the safe route, right? That's what I always say is that safe route. A, it's never been that safe, and B, it's not any safer today than it was later. So why don't you make that jump, right? Why don't you actually go out there, and if art is something that you're passionate about, follow whatever it is. And with today's modern technology, that's kind of where I want to flow it. You can accomplish anything. I've seen it already with so many of my peers of just like, hey, you go little by little, you really build a foundation. You can take this thing to the moon and you can help a lot of people on the way, right?
Yeah, I don't know if people would realize like art is in everything around us. I mean, you look at all the graphics you see on TV or computer screen, designs, posters, art's in everything. It's so, there's the video games you play, how many artists, the movies, again, all the movies that are CGI. I mean, how many artists are involved with that? I mean, you look at the list of the artists that just do the lighting, the artists that just do the landscape of it. I mean, there's like, 50 of them. So there are jobs out there, so I think if, when people realize that, what you can do with that art is, more wide ranging than just being an art teacher or just, an artist. There's other ways you can take, other directions you can take that art degree. I mean, a lot of my students who go on for their Master of Fine Arts, a few of them are, working artists, but some of them find, different things to do with that art, that might not be exactly just being an artist or a professor. So if it's just getting the idea out there to our, our parents or, whoever, that art, is multifaceted, and doing a degree in art kind of makes you a little bit more flexible and able to take that in a lot of different directions. I mean, God, the jobs that like my son, I have a 17-year-old, the job that he's gonna do might not even be invented yet,
Oh, for sure.
So, I mean, because everything, like you said, everything's changing. It has changed so much. You talk about those factory jobs. Where I grew up is all these, art, or excuse me, leather factories, leather mills, they're all gone. All the people who thought, I'm gonna get out of school and, get a job at the leather mill and that pays okay. Those factories are all gone. They're torn down. So you don't know, what the jobs are for our kids, or, if you ever have kids, where, what they're going to be doing would be something you've never even heard of yet. So.
And the way that I'm looking at it, and I think a big part of the where I like to steer this show is the relationship with the unknown, right? Like, it's something I say is it's not something that should be feared. Now, if you see a direct, immediate threat, yeah, use your common sense and figure it out, right? But just the initial thing to be like, we got to be a possum, we got to freeze, what's going on? Freeze. No. Just like earlier, you got to be multidimensional. You got to be able to adapt to a certain times, right? You can't just be the grumpy guy that's talking about the good old days, right? Of like, I don't know why we're these podcasts. Why can't they just use newspapers or whatever is going on, right? Like, all right, dude, let's go sit down, grandpa. You're all right. Like, but it's just one of those things of just hearing like all those opportunities, right? And what art means to people, especially doing it. And it's such a crazy concept because art is one of the main things where the better you get at it, the easier it looks, right? That's usually everything, right? However, to the average eye, right, it's very hard to tell. And even pricing, we can get into that too, because that's such an I'm so big on that to where people the average person thinks like an employee, right? They think like, well, hold on now, it only took you an hour to do that. Why does it cost $1,000? Why does it cost $10,000? What's going on? And you're not understanding the reps that it took. It's like, no, it took me half my life to actually get good at this specific style that I'm doing. So it's not in the time. I don't get paid for time. Like, that's what my mentors pushed to me literally right out of the gate. When I was 17 years old, they were like, "Hey, Venture, you're never going to do something where you're getting paid for your time. You're going to get paid for what's between your ears and the value that you provide to people, because that's what can really get you to the next level and develop the type of power and the type of influence that you're looking for." So you need to have that confidence to go, "Yeah, if you want to do this, I'm going to come in for a day or two, but this is the bill. Why is this the bill? Because I rep this every single day," right? So just having that confidence and developing as an artist, I want you to touch upon that, because this is the only industry that charges themselves less than minimum wage regularly, like when you're first starting out, to where when I work with some of these guys who are opening up studios, right, or freelance or whatever it is that they're doing, I'll look at the numbers. My favorite story is a tattoo guy that I was working with, and he literally did an entire back piece, right? That was like 8 to 10 hours or whatever he did. He spent all day, like some magnificent, just like, Taj Mahal type of back piece. And then at the end, the guy's like, "How much?" And he just traded it for a bag of chips. Like, he was literally just like, "Feed me," basically, like, "Feed me dinner, and this is what we can do. We'll call it even." And I'm like, "No, man, you got to think about the time. You got to think about the materials. Like, that's just minimum. And then now your effort and your talent, like, tell me about that." Because
Yeah,
you have more experience with that than anybody, I'm sure.
and how many years it took him to do that full scale back tattoo? Yeah, I mean that's something my painting teacher talked to me about either in undergrad or when I got out of grad school. I was working there too. That's where I was teaching first, so the same place I went to undergrad. But he said, "You're not pricing based on the size of the painting or how long it took you to make." It's, he's like, "When I, come up with the prices for my painting, and people ask, why is it so much?" He's like, "I, it's not the 2 hours it took me to make the painting. It's the 20 years I've been painting, all that experience that's led up to that." So that's what you do. You have to try to think about that when you come up with your pricing. But you're right. A lot of us artists undersell ourselves. And I have students, are asked, if they want to sell a piece, and they're so shy about it, and they want to sell something, that they've been doing this art for 4 years, and they, put a lot of time in this, and they're going to sell it for like $200. I'm like, "What are you, crazy?" I'm like, "That barely covers your material costs. Don't, if they're not gonna, if they're not willing to pay you that thousand or whatever, then they don't really want that work. Somebody will." So you have to be confident, in, what you do to get those prices. But you also, you kind of have to, you can't start, I don't think you should start out, or this is the way I thought of it, maybe, and maybe your generation is more bold, but I wouldn't want to start out like with my first painting that's $15,000.
Oh, of course not.
I want to work up to, okay, these paintings were this much, and now I can, safely build my price up, but make it make sense, not so it jumps like crazy. I actually went to graduate school with a guy, got a show at a good gallery in Baltimore, and when the gallerist tried to set the prices, he refused. He thought he was underselling him, so he told him to jump the prices up from like 5,000 to 15,000. He didn't sell
Whoa.
a painting, and he was cut from the gallery, because he was kind of difficult about it. So you do have to, kind of listen and start at a certain point, but then, the prices will, once people, are buying them, the prices will go up. But don't undersell yourself either.
And tell me what you think about this, because this is something that I've been really big on across all industries, is people, it's not that people don't care about like products or art or whatever it is. The main thing that they'll remember is how you made them feel, that emotion, that story behind what it is. I don't care if you're a valet at Caesar's Palace, all right? People are going to remember the service and how you made them feel, good or bad. So you need to be the most detailed that you can humanly be. You need to spend 10 hours of your day just physically thinking about, like, how are people going to feel about this? What is the experience going to be? And ultimately, that's what's going to drive everything on the back end of, like, hey, why is my art this valuable? Well, this is why I'm valuable, because I take the time, I go up to to, I don't know, the middle of the desert every single summer in the middle of 118 degrees. And this is how I get the colors for these stones that I'm working on. And guess what? These stones, then they sit and they settle for another whatever, whatever, whatever. I'm not saying lie, don't lie, but
No.
if you're going to be authentically that person, that's a part of the story. That's a part of why this art ended up combining into this powerful piece that you ended up making. And you can't just try to like short sell it of, no, this is just what I do, right? I think so many times people are like, well, why am I special, right? Why me? What is going on here? And it's like, I'll sit here and look at somebody all the time and I'm just like, you did this? This is what you're passionate about? This is what you love? I can feel how much you love this based off of this piece because the emotion that I'm feeling right now, it's making me look at it. Every minute that I look at this, I find something new. I see, oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that this guy was looking at this guy. And then this guy was looking at this guy's wife. And then, oh my gosh, look, the wife has a gun in her pocket and this and that. So it's like the creativity behind that's where the value is, right? Is the story that it promotes, the emotions that you have. And I just think that, you know, more of that behind the scenes stuff needs to come out so that the average consumer can sort of understand the importance behind that. What do you
Yeah,
think?
no, I totally agree with that. It's something I'm not good at myself, but I'm trying to get into that. Like with social media, if you look at good, successful artists on social media, they're giving the backstory. They're showing you the reels of how they're making the painting. They might be talking over, thinking about like what they're doing, how they're thinking about their color. So they're giving you that backstory, telling you how I made it, what it's about, and that I think, drives the followers that they might get, but also the sales. And there's so many artists now that don't really need the gallery system because they're able to make those sales off of social media, or they sell to the social media and the galleries reach out to them because of their successful use of social media. And that's something I have to get better at. I think my students are better at it than I am. I'll put out a post and then I'll forget to do a post for a while. And I got to get into like posting daily.
And that's something that everybody battles with, right? And it's going to be amazing for kind of the younger artist that's listening to this when it does come out because it's you're not an artist. Guess what? Or you are an artist and you're also the promoter. And you're also the marketer, and you're also the boss, and you're also the employee, and you're also the janitor, right? And you're also the number one fan club or whatever it is. So here's the crazy part is people ask me like, oh, hey, you do a podcast? And I'm like, no, I edit a podcast because if we're being honest, that's what I spend most of my time doing is editing, setting things up, and then putting them out and making it hopefully look as easy as, oh yeah, I just hit play and we made it happen. But it's the consistency, right? And I think that's the part where whether you're an artist or not, yeah, you're gonna have to get with the times. You're gonna have to learn how to edit software. You're gonna have to learn how to make Instagram reels, YouTube shorts, videos, and reach out to people and be authentic with it. Actually love to do it because those are the people that succeed. Nobody wants to watch a video of somebody that's trying to do what everybody else is doing, right? You have to go, no, tell me how you made this painting of this sunflower or whatever it is that you're doing because I can connect with that. Now it's a form of escapism for me. And now we have it on the back end of you have your social media that you're building, right? And the supporters that you're creating. And then the true essence of like what you really love to do, which is paint sunflowers or whatever it is. But that consistency goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning, right? Of you just got to do it every single day, a little bit every single day. And I promise you, just like a muscle, just like an instrument, whatever it is, if you're really committed, you will get better. You may not be able to see progress, right? And that's the hardest thing is when you're hammering at something, that's where if you put 10,000 guys or girls in a room and you go like, hey, what does venture really know about? It's the grind. I will beat this hammer in the nail 10,000 times without ever seeing that nail go down an inch because I have a belief right now that this nail will get down eventually, and that's where progress comes from, right?
Well, and that's it exactly. If you want to be an artist, you are an independent, contractor or independent businessman. You're like you said, you're your boss, you're your marketer, you're making the product, you're the janitor, you had to clean up, your studio. Unless you're like, there's this famous Francis Bacon was a big artist. He's famous for his paintings, but everybody knows about his studio. It was like the messiest studio you've ever seen. If you ever look
Oh,
up
really?
pictures of Francis Bacon's studio, you'll be like, oh my God, how'd this guy work in there? But yeah, you have to do it all. And that marketing, you have to be, if you're being an artist, you've got to be a professional. You've got to get those business cards. You've got to, promote your work. You've got to get yourself out there.
Oh, this
And
guy's a hoarder, Francis Bacon. I
yeah.
just Googled it. Yeah, no, he's a hoarder. This is legit. Like, I can't see the floor.
That's crazy, this studio. But it's what he was able, it's, I think, for him, it was probably the kind of space that he felt creative in, that I always love looking at pictures of artist studios just to see, what kind of workspace they're in, and how they set that up. Is it messy? Is it, neat? And then it makes me think about my own space, and my space feels, oh, go ahead.
I'm so big on that, 'cause you're hitting on literally what I have written down, which is the process and everybody's individual process. And that's something where you can kind of teach it, but you can't. You have to figure it out on your own. You literally have to understand, as a business or whatever it is that you're trying to create, everybody's process does look different, right? And that's a fact of life, of whatever it is. I can take me, for example, and then I want to hear a little bit about like your process day to day. Like I said, I'm building what I hope to be one of the premier financial institutions in America. It's going to take me 30, 40 years to do it, but that's what I'm dedicating my life to, right? And I love it, and I love helping people, and that's what fires me up every day. I am not a suit and tie guy. I am not a guy that's going to be up in the big fancy office, oh, ha da 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 da, driving a Porsche or whatever. Like, whatever that idea is, my first day in, I was like, oh, hell no, that is not what I'm doing at all, because that's just not me. So I get phone calls literally from my team in the office that are like, where are you at? And I'm like, I'm in a park working. How are you in a park working? What do you mean? I've called 30 clients already. Like, I've gotten half a day's work already. What are you doing right now? Oh, you're by the water cooler, right? Yeah, bye. On to the next thing. Going. So it's like when I have these 15 tasks to do, right? Big things, meetings, whatever it is that's going on. I personally am so just hyperactive, ADHD, bouncing around. I know I can't get this done in one place. I don't want to say it's impossible. I've never done it once in my life, though. Get 15 tasks in at one spot. I have to break it up. Let's go, just like a workout. I've worked out all my life, been an athlete, a meathead my whole life. We're going to do five things at this coffee shop. We're going to do five things actually in the office, because my boss is going to yell at me if I don't show up, right? We're going to do five things. I'm going to get the hell out of there as fast as possible. And then I'll come to the home office here and I'll start working on things there, right? Now I've just made everything so much smaller. Instead of doing a 15 task sprint, right? I'm just doing five and then five and then five, and then everything's good. But that's my process. Every single day, I can now look back at my little one pager of whatever or my agenda, and I'm like, oh, I got everything done today. It didn't feel like it, but I did, right? Instead of just like beating your head by me saying like, oh, but this is how my partner works. You know, this is how he does, which I do see guys, they sit in their office all day. I don't know how they do it. They come out at 5 o'clock p.m., 6 o'clock p.m., and they're like, time to go home. And I'm like, I don't know how you locked yourself in there all day, but I like to be free. I want to be out with the people. And that's my process, right? And it's taken me a long time to figure it out, and like a lot of kind of heartache to be like, am I allowed to do this? And then once you see success, you're like, oh, I'm going to do whatever I want until they tell me I can't, right?
I think my process is, when I have like a full studio day, if I'm not teaching or whatever, I try to get, I get the coffee, I go sit down in the studio, I stare at what I'm going to do. But I'll have like, a big painting I'm working on, but I'll also have some small stuff. So if something's not, feeling right in that big one, I'll move over to a small painting, or drawing, just to keep myself, moving and active. I think, something, I might have some undiagnosed adult ADHD, because I'll walk out of the room, and then I'll be, going to get something, and then I'll see something else, get distracted, do that, and then get myself back to the studio eventually. But yeah, I like to, I don't have like, I'm not like someone who says I'm a morning person. I'm my most creative in the morning. I feel like I'm creative whenever I can get in the studio, and sometimes that means working till 2, 3 in the morning. Might not mean I'm the best the next day, but if it's if it's catching me and I feel like staying in there and working, I'll stay till I can't work anymore. So I just try to find those moments, but I try to keep some consistency. I don't want to like just say whatever it hits me that day I'll work. I try to get into the studio, but sometimes that might mean okay, later at night instead of sitting down and watching TV or reading, I'll go in the studio and I'll work till 2 in the morning.
And kind of the work that you do, and I want to hear about something that you've been working on recently, just because I think it's great for the listener to hear, and I'm curious too, but I love when a craft can be done over the course of an entire lifetime. That's the most interesting thing ever. Think about we got NFL guys, right? Let's say Tom Brady, greatest guy ever, right? He was done at 40 or whatever, 42,
Five.
43, whatever it
Yeah.
was. Yeah, whatever it was. Oh my God, he's a grandpa at 45, right?
I know.
He's never going to touch a ball. He's never going to get out there and work that crap. Michael Jordan, right? He had to hang it up in the 90s. What was that? 30 years ago, right?
Yeah.
But art, like that's also something with the work that I do, is I see guys who are in their 70s and they're, putting billions of dollars in this and that and that and that. And I'm like, holy shit, yeah, you were a young guy like me at some point in time. You just got better every single day. And now you're one of the highest guys. You're a wizard. You're literally like a wizard status. And do you feel yourself not entering wizard status? That's crazy, but just think about, when you were in college, when you were in the kids' position that, you were in at one point in time, you have something that you've gotten better at or practiced over and over and over, and you just have this wealth of experience and knowledge to pull from. Do you feel more like powerful as a painter when you do that? And you're like, yeah, I'm a, how old are you right now?
56.
Yeah, hey, I'm a way better painter in my mid 50s than I ever was in my mid 30s, right? Is that it, which is a strange concept to think that you get better as you put more time in, right? How
Yeah.
has that been for you?
No, definitely. I love those. I'll get to that question, but I was gonna say, you say it's a craft that you can continue doing like your whole life. My painting professor from undergrad, he retired a few years ago, and he's been just painting all the time every day since he retired, and he's getting in these bigger shows with big name artists. So it's like he did that teaching thing. He was a great teacher, and he put his put you know put his all into being a professor at the college that he was at. But now he always painted, but now it's just all painting all the time, and he's getting attention for it, which is pretty amazing. He's and it's I maybe it's become with him, it's like he's gotten so much better at it over the years, but it's just knowing his craft. And that's the way I think about it. You said how have I am I a better painter now than I was in my 20s? I think so. I hope so. Because I've kept painting, even though my painting took me from realist figure painting into abstraction. I was still using a brush, even though I'm painting it differently. I'm still thinking about the way the brush goes down, still painting these forms, these colors. So then when I shifted back to realism, I took what I was learning, through that stage of abstraction, 18 years of that, and I think I'm a better figurative painter now than I was when I did it in grad school.
Oh, really?
It might be that attention to craft, the being the maybe the ability to be able to slow down a little. I think I, in my 20s, I had that energy where I wanted to knock out these paintings so fast and just, move on to the next one. And now I still want to do that. I want to get through them, but I want to make sure everything's working right. And I think I paint the figure, draw the figure better, and paint the features of the figure better. It might be a little more controlled. One of my students, is always picking on me, saying that, my paintings in grad school were looser, and now I'm like uptight. And I'm like, well, I don't know that it's tight, but I think it's just understanding the craft a little bit more, and I can't fight the way I paint. It's like, your handwriting. You write the way you're going to write. And the way I paint just feels natural. It doesn't feel like I'm overworking it. It feels like all those years I've been painting have led to the way I'm painting now, and it just feels like the right way for me to put down a mark and make the image. But
You
I
know, it's
definitely.
funny what you talked about as being like looser back in the day, right? And stiffness, that's kind of a big thing. People can be stiff figuratively, physically, whatever it is that you're doing, especially when you're a newbie at something. However, it's so I want to hear as it relates to art, being loose, being free physically, mentally, emotionally, does it lead to a better outcome in your experience? Because for me, I've made more money when I really don't even give a shit about, not give a shit, but like when I come in just like, nah, we're gonna make this happen or we're not. Let's gonna see. Oh, it's happening. Okay, hold on now. Let me grab my notebook. Like I didn't really even know this was gonna happen. When you're loose, right? Versus when I'm stiff and I'm like, okay, I have every column set up. I'm ready to go. I know these accounts forwards, backwards, this, and then oh, they didn't even show up. Like that was a waste of time. But being loose, being free, how does that play into the success of the art, kind of in your perspective?
In my perspective, I think it helps to be loose. Like, let's say like right now, maybe my brush strokes aren't as loose as they were, but the way I approach my painting is still loose. Like I'll go into the composition. I won't have everything like so precisely worked out that I have to follow. Like I do it. I have to do a, there's artists who will do a drawing to start. And then they do color studies, and then they do more color studies, and then they're doing studies of the head and the of the figure, and then they're finally putting it into the painting. I just go in and I start drawing things around, and if I have to move the arm, move the leg, shift things, scrape things away, repaint it, to me that's being loose and letting the paint, letting the painting tell me what it needs, rather than being so rigid that I have to follow this structure that I started in the beginning. Some people might work that way, and it might, feel right for them. For me, I feel like I would get bored if I had all that structure in the beginning, and I like the process. So if the process takes me where I have to remove something, scrape it away, repaint it, make shifts, I feel like to me that's more. It's more challenging, but it's also more enriching and rewarding because I figured out those problems and I made it work. And sometimes, you have to throw the canvas away and you start over. But I like that exploration in the process, that looseness as you go. I think it keeps your ideas open for new developments.
Yeah. And the way you put it right there was the word force that you used. You can't force it. You can't force anything, right? And I think sometimes it's so backwards. And I wish you could force it because I'd get everything done that I want to get. If I could just go in with a flamethrower and just go to work, like it doesn't work that way though. It's you literally have to like trust the process, like you're saying, and it's so important in whatever you're doing because it's like what is the word? You can't like when you use force, nobody likes being used force. No one wants to go in there and just, hey, go sit there, get out of here. You know, you can't eat that, you can't do that. Nobody likes that. But when you actually go, hey, this is the reason why, right? Or hey, this maybe could work a little bit better. Let's workshop it and try it. I'm a partner with you. I'm not gonna be your boss and tell you what to do. And that's what it sounds like. Obviously, you run your shop and your, you know, endeavors like that. And kind of what I wanted to touch on was basically just it's an important thing, the work that you do, right? And we talk about the word influencer. That gets thrown around my circle a lot, right? Influencer, whether it's social media, whatever it's not. I think a true influencer is somebody who, when I get a phone call from Skyler and it says, hey, this is a really great guy that has done a lot for me, I want you to talk to him. That's a big fucking deal right there. Like, whenever somebody has even said that about me behind my back, you know, I hope it happens. I don't know if it happens. We'll see, right? But that is all I strive to do, right? And you having these kids and having these young adults that are molding and, you know, getting better, and you're playing that part in it. Is it conscious to you how impactful you can be in somebody's lives when sometimes it's something so small, right? Because sometimes I find myself in a position to where I can I just recently, let's say last track season, right? My sister, like I said, was on the team. She was working some throws, right? One of the older girls ended up being the state champion for discus. I know how to throw the shit out of some disc. Like, that's one of my favorite events. So, and I like to think that I can help a young lady compete at the high school level and, you know, get and reach her goal. And I remember her coach was working on something else at the time. This was my sister's friend who was throwing. She wasn't quite getting it. And I remember walking over there and I just fixed two little things, was just like, hey, let's tweak your toe here. And when you're driving your hip, I want you to really follow through all the way and just trust that that momentum is going to carry you all the way through the throw. And next throw, just bombs, just getting it out there like kaboom, kaboom. And then later I was able to get updates, you know, hey, is your brother coming? Is this coming? And it just made me feel good because that was one of the few times where I was like, it was such a little thing. I didn't even try, but I've thrown thousands of throws in practice, right? With nobody ever looking. And just that small thing to be like, I think if you do this and this, it'll really work. And then I walked away and was just like, oh, she won the meet. That's amazing, right? So how do you feel and how does that impact kind of what you do of sometimes it's small things that can really make such a big difference, right?
I mean, I always think about that. Like, you know, I might get students in my, you know, beginning drawing class or 3D class who might not have had a lot of art experience. They didn't go to a high school that had an art program, or, you know, this is their first art class they've taken since eighth grade. And I don't want to discourage them. I find what they're working on, you know, or what we're working on. I find what's working for them in it. And I try to point those things out. Like, you're really getting this. You have a nice way of putting down a line, or, you know, the shape isn't quite working, but look at the way you did that line. Let's, you know, figure out how we can, you know, take that further. So I always try to find ways to encourage while also teaching them, you know, how to do you know, the process better, or understand the concepts we're covering. But I don't want to be that teacher that discourages. And I've heard all those stories. Like, I met this artist who he went to a college where in your sophomore year, or leading up to your sophomore year, you had to apply for the department you wanted to major in. And he wanted to be an artist and he got denied by the art department. And now he's a successful artist and he's had museum shows. And I bet you that art department wishes they said, hey, be an art major. He just kept doing anyway. He didn't get the major, but he found ways to work. So I try to, you know, not discourage anybody. If they have even an inkling of passion for it, or they're showing me that they're trying, then I'm gonna, you know, find ways to find their way that they can express themselves. And they might not be, maybe they're not gonna be someone who's drawing, but they find a way to work in a different medium. Maybe they can build stuff. Maybe they're good at you know, making, you know, video or printmaking art. But I've had a lot of students that might not have been the natural, you know, a natural drawer. But they've found other ways, like, you know, doing embroidery, doing printmaking, they go on to do some really cool stuff. So it's just helping them find their voice and not get discouraged in the medium that might not be a natural fit for them.
Oh, absolutely. And that's kind of attests to how you run your class. And I want you to kind of explain, oh, this is one of my favorite things because I've had a few of my former professors on, the only ones that like I actually liked. It was either I really fucked with you or I really didn't. Like that's the type of guy I was to where I really do march to the beat of my own drum. Like that's something that I've done my entire life. It's gotten me, you know, this far. And yeah, I've messed up a couple of times here and there, but it's when I'm really going with my soul and I believe in it, I'm all the way. There's nothing that's going to stop me or be in my path to get where I'm trying to go. But you having the flexibility and the freedom of like the way that you assign things, and it's very fluid. Like the last class that I ever took in my entire academic career was, I think it was an intro to Native America. It was AIS like 110, intro to Native studies, right? And the professor is actually a guy I've known all my life because my mom, you know, went to the same school. She went through the whole program at Cal State Long Beach. And he did something that I would have probably been the most powerful student in the entire school if I'd been able to do this with all my papers. He said, you can turn it in audio submissions. You can do that. You don't have to type in everything. Oh, you're doing a podcast. That's how you do it. This is what the discussion's about. Give it to me. This is what, whatever's going on. And I'd be making videos. I'd be throwing out audio. And that's how I submitted everything. Everybody in the class was listening to them. That was like the number one. You remember how you do like, hey, make a discussion and then reply to like one or two people or whatever it was. Everyone was just replying to mine because it was like the best medium to like, hey, let's listen to what this guy's saying. And that's what worked for me. But yet, if you tell me, hey, make a 13-page paper or something, I'm not doing that. I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not gonna write a 13-page paper. I'll talk to you for 2 hours about it. That's cool. I'm just not gonna sit down and write it because I like talking. That's how I want to do it. So the flexibility that he allowed to be like, that was the first time I ever did that. And I literally had him on the show and was like, thank you for doing that. Please don't ever stop doing that. Let the kids tell you how they want to be kind of taught, right? Let them guide you through the process. And you, as a leader, have to adapt your craft around the people that you're trying to influence, just like what I do. I would never walk into a young family, let's say, and I'm like, yeah, you're not putting your money in the right place. This isn't going to work. You have to put it over here. It's like, well, hold on now. Where do you want to go? You want a mansion or do you just want to live below your means? What type of lifestyle do you want? We need to talk about these things before I just say, give me $10,000 or something like that, right? So explain to me kind of the importance of that freedom.
I mean, I was fortunate enough to experience that too with the teachers I had. I had a photography teacher. I was taking color photo. We had to take two photography classes, and in the color one, the teacher knew I was doing paintings from photos, so photo-based paintings. And he's like, "Look, if you want to do your final project as paintings, and you're using photos as your resources, then fine." So I turned in like three paintings. Might have been more work than like taking the photo.
Yeah, that sounds crazy, but I got you.
But he knew that that's what I was passionate about, and it made the assignment more exciting for me. And so that's and like my painting professor was like that too. Like if I was signed up for advanced drawing, but I wanted to paint in it, I could paint in it. You could work in whatever media you wanted. They didn't have like I call it advanced studio. They had advanced painting, advanced sculpture. But all the teachers let you work in, what f was working for you. They didn't force you into the medium. So that's the way I approach it because I've had those kinds of teachers in my past, that allowed that freedom. So I've had like a drawing class that I teach where, at one point I looked at the end of the semester, I'm like, we didn't do a whole lot of drawing in this. People were doing installations, video, audio, photographs, and there wasn't, like hardly anybody had a pencil in their hand. I'm like, maybe I need to, incorporate some kind of drawing into the drawing class. But it's just letting them kind of experiment and explore. And they did some really cool stuff. So, I wasn't too upset about it, but I did want to, try to get them to try to integrate, drawing into some other stuff, but just letting them be free to find their voice and the ways they like to work and what media they like to work in. I think just it brings out the best in the students and it makes it more exciting for me to teach because I'm kind of they're keeping me on my toes. And in that advanced studio class where they're working in whatever media, there are things that they want to explore that I've never done. And we watch YouTube together and we figure it out and find ways to get to the answer,
Yeah.
everything's on YouTube. So,
Everything, right? And it's one of those things where, kind of to wrap this thing all together, I think one of the key themes is honestly, we need more art across all industries. We need more artists across all industries, not necessarily in the way that, you think about it. However, we don't want robots. Nobody likes robots to be involved with anything that you're doing. You want humans, you want people. And that's the number one thing about being a human is the creativity, the variety, the experiences, and just having that kind of notion and that encouragement to be like, I'm telling you that like that office space that I'm talking about, it's just a weird corporate blob. Like it's like, ew, let me get out of here. I just, because I'm so big on environment. Like I need that for my headspace. Like, I can't just fall in line and just be like, okay, yeah, we're all just doing this thing. I get scared. If I'm in a crowd like that, I'm like, hey, I got to go this way because I like being able to move. I like options and I like to bounce around. And that's what needs to be kind of continuing to shake up more and more industries is the artists, right? The art, the way that they build, the way that they move, and the perspective that they have ultimately, right?
Well, it's like that's why I like teaching at a liberal arts school because I'll get like biology majors, physics majors, math majors in my art classes, and some of them will take more than one art class, and that's what you want. You want that math. Math is a creative thing. It's not just about set numbers. I mean,
Yeah, you're
mathematicians are
telling me.
but you want that kind of creativity in the sciences too, because then that's how you're going to figure out how to find, a cure for, whatever disease, or, by being creative in the way you're approaching those, chemical, combinations. So I like when we do require all majors to take a creative expression class or, one or two. Yeah, I think right now it's one. I think we're proposing, they might take two creative expression classes, and, that could be in music, art, theater, whatever, creative writing. But I think that's good for all majors to get, some type of, creative class to understand the creative process, and then hopefully that translates into, whatever they're majoring in. Like maybe they'll be creative in environmental studies, finding different ways to help the environment. And I think all of those areas, the people who are good in them are the ones that are creative, the ones who are thinking outside the box.
Yeah, that's it right there. It's so important. And I couldn't have said it better myself. But as we kind of close out this conversation, I've had a blast talking to you. This has been so much fun. And what I'm kind of maybe going to throw a little challenge out there too is and to myself as well is I think I want more professors on, more people who, because I'm gonna be honest with you, I was like, I'm not having those guys on. Like, that's not what we're doing here. But it's been proving me wrong. I've never had a professor on that hasn't been a good time so far, right? So as we close things out here, I'd love to end with two final questions, and we're not in any hurry. You take your time. We're doing perfect on time. But the first one, you don't have to have an answer to. I just like to open it up and see if it takes us anywhere. And is there anything that I didn't get around to asking so far that you wanted to maybe highlight or maybe shed some light to about anything? It could be art related. It could be, I don't know, a dream or a burger you had last week or something like that. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Well, you had mentioned earlier about talking about the kind of art I make or what I'm making art about. So I can just talk briefly about that. Because I got back into figurative painting, I'm doing a series of paintings. So you asked like what I was working on now. And I'm working on a big painting. I did a drawing first, and then the drawing told me it needs to be a painting. And it's a series I'm calling Hercules in Suburbia. You talk about going to gym. I did bodybuilding contests in my 20s. Not all natural. I never did steroids, so I was never huge, but I was in the gym all the time. But that's not how I'm thinking of Hercules. I'm thinking of Hercules like I moved to suburbia. I've lived in some, cities, but now I'm in like a suburban development, and it was an odd place for me to be. So I'm, having to do all the daily, chores, all the stuff around the lawn. I see everybody around me mowing their lawn like three times a week, it seems. And so I'm doing these paintings of, the Hercules has now, gotten into middle age, and he's like blowing up pool toys. So that's a painting I'm working on now. Like big stack of pool toys, pool rings, and they're like towering and about to fall on me. I did one where I'm vacuuming, and I'm holding up the chair with one arm, and I'm vacuuming. But I made the vacuum super long, so it looks more like a spear, and it's based off of Hercules' labor where he had to fight this boar. And so my Hercules is kind of like a Don Quixote reference as well, where I think I'm doing these heroic things, but they're all in my head. I'm just doing daily chores, daily activities. So it's
Yeah.
kind of a tongue-in-cheek look at middle-aged and trying to keep my life exciting, where I'm, might be doing dishes all day or vacuuming or mowing the lawn. How can I turn that everyday task into something that, is more heroic, or more meaningful? But tongue in cheek, they're pretty funny. I think they're funny.
Yeah, I like that too. And kind of what jumps out at me with that is the importance to like really enjoy the process and the ride, right?
Yeah.
Because you really do only have one ride. And I try to stay as conscious of that as possible when maybe I'm having a bad day, right? Or I'm just like, ah, dang, I don't know if this is the right thing for me. This is a lot harder than I thought it was gonna be, right? And then I realize like, oh, this is a great opportunity to be in. Like, this is part of kind of the story or whatever it is that like I'm doing. And one day, hopefully if everything's healthy and says it, I'll be looking back on this and be like, man, I'm happy I made the decision that I wanted to do. I'm happy that I did it on my terms instead of, maybe trying to do what I think was the right thing to do. And it's beautiful, right? Like you just have to take it day by day almost. And yeah, I guess if you're really present, like it sounds like you've been, you wake up and it's Hercules and you're like, why? Well, hold on, I got to mow my lawn. Where'd the time go, right? Like what
Yeah.
happened? Because you were out there just getting after it. And that's such an amazing perspective that I've never even thought about before. It's funny that you bring that up.
Yeah. Like if you go to my website, the home screen is a painting of it's based off of the Hercules labor where he had to clean these stables. And he had to clean the stable in a day, so he rerouted a river to wash through the stable. And so my version is I'm walking up the stairs with the garden hose to go clean my son's room, because my son's room is like these, stables. They're just he's a 17-year-old, and just things are everywhere. So it's kind of a funny painting of it's broken into like comic book panels, but it's me coming up the stairs, turning the corner, and then you see his room, which is just, chaotic.
Oh,
He
that's
loved
funny.
that I made his room the focus of a painting, not really, but he was looking at it the other day. He appreciated the painting, but I don't think he likes that now everybody sees how his room was. So
Yeah. No, I'd have been like, see, you're welcome. Had I cleaned that room up, like you'd be
exactly.
drawing something else. Like that's the way I would have worked it. Like you're
Yeah.
welcome, basically. Where's my cut? That's what I
Yeah.
need.
I'm gonna keep it messy now so you can do more paintings. Yeah.
Yeah, like we got
Yeah.
inspiration. This is just the spark. This is
That's
the tip of
right.
the
Yeah.
iceberg, right? The
Yeah.
tip of the iceberg. So,
Yeah, exactly.
I've had such a good time chatting with you, and I hope to have you on, sooner rather than later again, when you're free and available. It'll be definitely awesome to have you jump on, and we're just scratching the surface, right? That's kind of all we're
Yeah.
doing here. And the last question is my favorite question because it helps the show grow immensely. And this is your time to really kind of shout some people out. And you have some experience. You already know what I'm about to ask, but it's kind of what brought you here. And it's like, who are two to three people that you can think of that, maybe are in the art community, maybe are not, maybe are good business people that have a great spirit that you would like to think I should reach out to and see if they'd be interested in telling their story and just sharing a little bit about what they're about, just like you have. Does anyone come to mind?
Yeah, I have a few, a couple former students. One just graduated. The reason I'd shout her out is she's that one I mentioned that was doing digital illustrations and now is like focused on painting. She got into grad school to do teaching, and then after doing a couple summer classes, decided, I'm going to take the unknown step of dropping out of the grad program and focus on my paintings to then get into graduate school for art. So I thought that was a pretty brave thing to do, to get away from the known and go to the unknown. That's Sarah Mendez. And then another student, Steph Perez, she graduated a while ago, but she was a graphic designer and then started her own business doing pet portraits and got a lot
Oh,
of
those are awesome.
attention. Yeah, digital pet portraits that look like graphic, like what you see in graphic novels.
Okay.
But then also, while doing that, got into fitness competitions. So she's doing graphic design, her own pet portraits, and fitness competitions. And that's to me, she's a go-getter. When she
Yeah,
was
that
here,
sounds like a lady I want to talk to for sure.
she was on the basketball team, and she still holds the record for top scorer for the women's basketball team.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's just that kind of personality that just is go, go, go. And then I have another student who teaches at Rhode Island School of Design now. So went from this small college, McDaniel College, to teaching at one of the top art schools in the country. Her name's Cheney Celebrato Royer. But I can give you their Facebook or Instagram pages if you want.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll reach
Yeah.
out and yeah, that's gonna be exciting to sound like really interesting guests. So I'm excited to
Yeah.
have them on. But yeah, like really honestly, kind of some of the big takeaways is like you're saying, of just really understanding that like your craft, everything is in your craft, right? You don't find yourself and then think like, okay, now I can do the thing. You'd find yourself by doing the thing, right? And what was that quote in the beginning? Run it by me. It was like the medium doesn't precede. What was that? Let's finish off with that one again.
Don't let the idea dictate the medium. Or no, excuse me. Don't let the medium dictate the idea. Let the idea dictate the medium.
That's what I think we can all use a little bit more of in our day to day. And
Yeah.
yeah, I just wanted to close out on that. This has been another episode of Natural Thoughts and Talks. We appreciate you guys for listening. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye.